We've taken our memory microphone to the Sheraton Blackstone Hotel, and we're at Flaming Sally's, the beautiful new night spot, where the current big attraction is the man whose music is responsible for the golden era of the sugar blues. Clyde McCoy, welcome back to Chicagoland.
Thank you, Chuck.
We're glad to have you with us today. You have a lot of fans out there in radio land.
Well, it's been staying and rolling. That's what we'd like to see.
How long has it been since you've been here?
Since I played in Chicago, let's see, this area. In other words, I played on the outskirts a couple of engagements. But it's been about 20 to 22 years I played here.
That's 22 years too long.
Well, the last time was when I came out of the Navy. I went into the, it was in, called the Stevens.
Uh-huh.
And I went in for 3 months. Then I'd go out for six and come back three. We did that for 3 years, 45, 6, and 7. And then, of course, my good friend Frankie Masters took over the Ice Show, and I've been gone ever since.
Well, we're glad you're back in town.
Thank you. But I started many years before you were doing this program.
Oh, yes.
At the Drake Hotel in 1930. I came to town and played the Drake Hotel and the Morrison Hotel. And I was in between those two hotels for 4 years through the World's Fair, the second World's Fair. Mm-hmm. And before that, I played the Majestic Theater and the Palace Theater on my way through what we call the Western Vaudeville Circuit, Keith Orpheum Circuit.
And you were a big favorite in the Chicago area then.
Well, I have a lot of friends. They proved that by all sticking by me and came out.
They're out tonight, too, I'll tell you, here.
It's just wonderful. I can't imagine. I always pull a gag. I say, you must have thought Al Hurt was going to be here tonight. He's a good friend of mine.
They knew that Clyde McCoy was here. When was the first time you got a trumpet in your hands?
Well, 1912, I was 9 years old, and it took me about a year to pay for it. It was $7.
Uh-huh.
And so by the time in 1917, when I was 14, I had my own Dixieland band playing on the riverboats. I'm from Kentucky, and would play up and down the river from Cincinnati up to Huntington, West Virginia, and we'd dance on the boats. Then I went to the Island Queen. That was a step upward, for Mr. Ed Schott in Cincinnati. I started in vaudeville, took my band of 10 pieces in 22 through 27. So 1928 in Kansas City, I added two more trombones and a couple of more trumpets and singers. Went to the Drake Hotel in the 30s, in other words, December of 1930. And I've had a big band for 32 years, and the last 18 years I have had the Dixieland Band because I saw it coming when certain types of music became more popular, let's put it that way, than what I was playing. We were playing, like Dick Jurgens and Ted Weems and like. Then rock and roll came in, and so I figured I better start with a small group. That way I can, we've just been over in Japan, Okinawa, Osaka. We did some radio shows and television and civilian shows.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And also, naturally, the military. That was the principal reason for our visit over there.
You said before that you were from Kentucky.
Well, 1903, I was born back on Big Sandy River between West Virginia and Kentucky, and I was too young to understand at first that we were beginning a 70-year feud with the Hatfields.
Aha, you were part of the Hatfields.
That's right. I'm the last of the boys on the McCoy side.
You still have a grudge against any of the Hatfields?
Oh, no. One was my barber out in San Francisco about 20 years ago.
What was your first professional date? What was the first time you played for money?
For money? Uh-huh. Well, 1917, when I was 14, I had my little group in the pit queuing silent movies. William S. Hart and Pearl White and Ruth Roland, Mabel Norman.
Nickelodeon?
Yes, it was about 5 cents to get in. And I doubled Reel Winder, winding the reels up in the booth. After I would finish playing, I'd run up the stairs and wind reels. I had a double. I was making $3.50 a week. Now, that's $3.50 a week. And I paid for my horn. And
you saw a lot of movies, too.
Here's the problem. See, I was only 14 when I started professionally to making any money. Oh, I went to $4 a night and $10 a night, you know, and went and made it. But it was all right. But along came a picture called Damaged Goods for Adults Only. And they laid my band off that week. So it wasn't so funny that, you know, we wanted to play every night. But they waited while it ran. Why, of course, that wouldn't. It'd be for everybody today. I mean, that was a very mild.
I'm surprised. I thought that most of the musical accompaniment for the silent pictures would be piano playing, but yet there was more than
we had piano.
Well, I mean, strictly piano playing.
Oh, right? Well, this is when they were first starting to put orchestras in the pits.
Oh, I see.
Now, that's back at the end of World War I. That's when the sheet music was just about half the size it is today. There was a shortage in paper. And if you remember an old number, if you ever saw some of that old music, some of the museums, Jada, for example, and Dardanella, that came on real small and a long way to Tipperary, and all those numbers. Now, I'm talking about World War One, and
War I.
I worked in a defense plant in the afternoon, and I would play in the theater at night. That way, I was making what we called boots for the doughboys, we called them. Of course, I mean, you are familiar with those phrases because of your history, but I was there.
you were working for the doughboys.
I haven't stopped. I don't like to lay off. I work 50 weeks a year now.
You're still very active every week of the year.
Oh, yes. We've ordered Japan back 8 weeks, and we've gone to Europe now, and we're going to Lake Tahoe. We were in Florida this winter, and I'm doing a lot of opening of new motels and motor inns, and a lot of them, about five different names, which I won't mention on your show because it may not be the proper thing to do. But then Lake Tahoe will be at what's called Harvey's Resort Hotel. That's for dancing on the 25th floor. And then we go to Vegas, open Desert Inn for Wilbur Clark on 3rd of July, 1950. So with a big band. Then right away I cut down to the small band along about there because I saw it coming that we were going to be swamped with rock and roll records. So I want to keep my style, and now it's come back. I think the style is coming back where they want to hear the melody and quiet it down a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think there's been an improvement over rock and roll. I don't know. I don't put rock and roll down. They have one thing, Guy Lombardo, and I agreed. They have one thing that a lot of the bands lack is a beat. It might be loud, but it's steady. Steady as a metronome. And that's one thing they do have. And, of course, I remember the people, older musicians than I, when I was just starting out, they said, oh, that Chaz. He said, don't make that flutter tongue. Don't make all those funny sounds over that beautiful instrument. Well, people, if they want to hear it and buy 12 million records of my Sugar Blues, I'm not going to fight it.
12 million records?
I've sold more than that.
Holy,
that was about 5 years ago.
Wow.
And in Chicago, I have an attorney that takes care of of worrying about collecting them, you know, and so forth. Sometimes you have to use a little pressure.
Well, what is the story of the Sugar Blues? How did that song come to Clyde McCoy?
Well, I saw it in a dime store. It was just written about 30 days prior to my buying it for a dime in a dime store, music counter, and I in 1922, and Clarence Williams wrote that number. In fact, his grandson is on Mod Squad. If you remember, Clarence Williams III, that's his grandfather. And Lucy Fletcher wrote the lyric, which wasn't the greatest, and he gave her $50 for it. And of course, then I picked it up about 30 days after Clarence wrote it, and I have it now on 13 labels: Columbia, Decca, Capitol, Mercury, Design, Top Rank, Todd.
Wow!
I have it on.
Well, in just about every anthology of the big band sounds, the great music from the past or even from today, we'll find Clyde McCoy and the Sugar Blues as part of the collection. It's
well,
everywhere.
That's true.
It's on everything.
You can find it at the... see, you can't blame... I do not blame disc jockeys for the for what will make the, sell their clients want. In other words, straight Dixieland, I don't know, but... One of them is KFI in California, and the other is here in Chicago, that will play Dixieland records. You can't blame them because if their audience or their sponsors. Mm-hmm. After all, whether they're there to get the most out of their profession. And I don't blame them. If it's opera tomorrow and then we have to go to putting the needle down or putting the tape on opera, and their sponsors want that, if the people turn to that, which I don't think they will this year, but in America, but Dixieland is something that never changes. And if you notice, I play the melody all the time.
Sure.
You'll know what I'm playing at all times. And that's where a lot of the far out, as we call them, groups, they play Dixieland, but it isn't what the public understands. You see, we're playing 52 weeks a year. All right, say 365 days a year. We're going to progress and advance in our music, like Stan Kenton, faster than the average person who goes to a dance once, twice a month, and they're not going to progress as fast. So the musicians they leave the bosses. Henry's not my boss. The public that comes in through that door is my boss, and you have to have something besides music. You got to have warmth, and you have to have a happy group to play Dixieland. Because here's the tired businessman. He comes down to see you to relax. Well, if the band's up there with sullen faces and they have wristwatches and they're watching them all the time, and they take long intermissions and play short break sets, I'm against that because that's why I work 55 years this September. It will be my 55th year. I mean, I'm ending my 55th year in September. So I try to play what the people are paying me, you know?
I saw a very beautiful tribute to Clyde McCoy tonight here at Flaming Sally's. We were watching you play and enjoying it more and more.
Oh, I had
fun. Across from our table was Mrs. Clyde McCoy.
Oh, yes, Maxine.
And she was smiling and she was excited. It was a beautiful sight.
Well,
to see
that way. She sang with me and her three sisters called the Bennett Sisters, and they joined me in 37. Well, 9 years of that, they sang with me.
Uh-huh.
We all went in the Navy. All of us went in the Navy, and together.
The whole
18 of us.
But
the United States
sisters.
Naval Reserve. The sisters and all. So they stayed with me. So we were married when I knew I was getting out, and I did a couple of jumps, and hurt my back, so I was surveyed out. And all my boys were out about the same time that I took in with me.
Uh-huh.
So no one knew at the time. I didn't tell Bu Perz, as we call it in Washington, but I had a contract with what was then the Stevens Hotel, ready for when I got out of the Navy, because I was organized and I didn't have to meet my men in the service. Now, a lot of the boys, Glenn Miller and some of those boys, they found out that there were four or five of their boys going in various parts of the country. Well, through the Pentagon, they had them all shipped to one point. And that was where Glenn had his boys to meet. And it was wonderful, four or five of them. But we took 18 in, and we from the Peabody Hotel, and we played, and went right to Norfolk and enlisted, stayed in through VJ Day, and came out and went in the Boulevard Room, as I said at the early part of my story. We played there for...
During the time you were in the service, though, you were entertaining
troops the whole time,
right?
I had five bands in there, plus the one I took in, our civilian band, as we call it. And we met the boys from Great Lakes, and I know they would be crying and feeling low because they left home.
Yeah.
And I had my band out the station, and I'd give them circulars, come in, Rick Hall, CD, and that night, and we have a big show to keep the minds off of being away from home, and it was rough on them. And, of course, I was single at the time, and I had no one to leave behind, but same time, it was the fastest 3 years I've ever spent because it was so enjoyable to see the faces on those. And I always, having traveled so much, I'd say, where are you from? They'd say, I'm from Milwaukee. A little shipmate would stand up and say, Milwaukee. I said, okay. I said, I used to play the Eagles Ballroom and the Wisconsin Roof and the Riverside Theater. And I remember those good steaks down a certain hotel. And bring back memories, you know. And I had a quiz contest going on. So, and my wife, they had sang with us three and four nights a week when we had what we called the duty.
Uh-huh.
And they'd be right there on the stage to sing. At Christmas time, we'd go around to the various barracks. We had 100 barracks, and we'd serenade. And, of course, when I'm... went down, and I was at a 70th Sailor on the base, so we didn't have streets, sidewalks, or anything. So there was a man by the name of Boss Crump and Ed Crump in Memphis, where we were 25 miles out of the city of Memphis, Tennessee. So I went down, and he owed me a boxing ring. Well, that was our stage. Then I went to a mortuary, a couple of them, and borrowed 500 chairs, I think, anything we could borrow, until Washington gave us the money to build, and that was about a year or so afterwards that we finally had our own rec halls. It was rough in the first. So if I were to go to Vietnam, I've been on Okinawa, but if I went to Vietnam, I'd feel right at home, because I'd always think about milling to Tennessee, yeah. my Navy career, you know, because we had nothing to work with except what we borrowed, we borrowed them for a while.
Appropriated.
Oh, yes. But I enjoyed it very much.
What about radio? What did Clyde McCoy do on radio?
On radio?
And remotes and things like that.
Yes, in 1922, I was on the first remote of WHAS, the Courier-Journal-Times in Louisville, Kentucky, over to our theater. Remote. And we would go on for 4 or 5 hours without stopping.
Really?
And we didn't... that's what we did. And I'd let 3 or 4 of the boys go out to lunch, dinner, and that's what we did.
While you were on the air?
While we're on the air. we had 12, and we'd cut down, and maybe we'd all go and leave the piano player there to play some music.
Well, back in 1922, there wasn't a great deal of radio on, so
no.
Well, you must have had the listenership there. Anybody who had a radio set there.
Oh, we had the crystal sets.
We used
to think it was far away to hear Coon Saunders Nighthawks with a crystal set.
Right out of the Black Hawk restaurant here in the Chicago area.
Here, and the Mule Bach Hotel Plantation Grill for Barney Ellis down in Kansas City. I went through the crystal set days, and the day fan. Why, you bought a day fan, it took up about half of your living room. Now today, you can, have a little radio in your pocket.
Things have changed a lot, haven't they?
Yes, but I go along with the times. Now, I have a 17-year-old drummer. I have a 20-year-old tuba player. Well, they keep me young. And people want to know, I was just left Scottsdale, Arizona, and they have a certain section out there where the elderly people retire. Well, of course, I like to look out my room of morning and see a lot of the young girls going to school or going to the golf course or and I don't think I'll go that route because I've always liked youngsters and all. So,
well, I'll tell you.
But we have time. We have wonderful time traveling.
Great. You know, the biggest hand of the evening comes, though, when you say, well, here's a tune we introduced back
1922.
Sugar Blues, and boy, everybody screams and yells, and there isn't a glass drinking or a dry eye in the place when Clyde.
Well, like
McCoy
I said on the show,
a lot of people who remember Clyde McCoy and the Sugar Blues, and there are a lot.
But everybody
of people
sort of imitated it with their hands and all.
Yeah,
that kept me alive. Major Bowes and all that. That kept me alive. I thank those people for doing it.
There are a lot of people, though, who have never heard of the Sugar Blues, who are rediscovering the Sugar Blues, and they're enjoying it today, and that is the endurable
The youngsters have a dance step to it now.
Why, sure. So,
my little nieces are 7, 8 years old, my nephews. They'll say, Uncle Clyde plays old-timey music, you know. That's cute.
Uncle Clyde, you keep playing the old-timey
music. Oh, well.
We'll always listen.
That's fun.
And we'll urge all of your fans.
But when I'm tired of smiling at the audience and saying it's your party, what do you want to hear, instead of like a lot of our leaders, it's caused a lot of... we have contributed a lot to the decline of big bands, and because we go out there and we play the tempo we want to entertain 15 musicians. We don't ask them. They don't want to hear Josephine. If they do, they say, oh, you must be they're the people that if they didn't come in the place, where would we be? I play to the people. It's their party from the beginning to the end. And the time that curtain goes up, it falls. If I can't, and I'm really happy. I couldn't act like that. I'm too old to act like that. I'm really having a real ball, as the youngsters say.
Well, your audience does, too.
Well, thank you.
The dance floor is packed here at Flaming Sally's, and everybody's
enjoying. Oh, it's quite a room. I'm sure happy to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you back in Chicago again,
thank
Clyde
you.
McCoy. And thanks for sharing some memories with us today.
Well, good, Chuck. Thank you.